Well, welcome back all. So here we are in our final talk of the day. Made it through, or almost made it through. So in our last talk today, we come to the paramis of equanimity and wisdom. And there's a reason that we've left these two paramis for last. It's because these are the qualities that really often arise out of the hours and the days and the years that we put into our practice of paying attention to what's going on in our bodies and in our minds. And they really arise out of our patience, our resolve, our persistence, our willingness to hang in there through all of our various ups and downs that we go through in our practice and in our lives. For example, when we spend a full day of sitting and walking, just like we've been doing today, observing our bodies and our minds and all the things that happen in them, just this continuity of practice itself has a very calming and stabilizing effect on the mind, which maybe you're feeling a bit of. And also, as we continue to observe through all of our ups and downs over the course of the day, we get some understanding of the way things are. We see how our experience includes both pleasant things and painful things. How it changes, it doesn't really stay the same for very long. And we see too that our ability to control what goes on in our bodies and minds, we have some, but it only goes so far. And with this understanding, we develop some equanimity and we develop some wisdom. So you might be more likely to recognize these qualities in yourself now as we near the end of the day than maybe you would be likely to recognize them at the beginning of the day. They're more evident often as we move deeper into our retreat. So in talking about these two paramis, I'm going to start with equanimity. Now in one of his talks or articles, I guess, on this subject, the Vipassana teacher Gil Fronsdale says that equanimity is one of the most sublime emotions of Buddhist practice. And he describes it as the ground for wisdom and freedom and the protector of compassion and love. And that's really beautiful to me. And based on that description, you have a sense that equanimity is a really, really important quality to cultivate in our practice and develop. And we can think of equanimity as having several aspects. One of them has to do with this steadiness and stability of mind. And the ability to see clearly without being all caught up in what we're seeing. And you might also call this non-reactivity. But it's kind of easy to sort of misinterpret that. So it's not in the sense of being indifferent or cold towards whatever is arising. Not that sense of non-reactive of being just, nothing is there. But more in the sense of not being caught up in greed or anger or delusion in the face of whatever we're seeing. So we can see what's going on without trying to grab onto it if it's a pleasant thing, or push it away if it's an unpleasant thing, or ignore it and pretend it isn't even there if we're deluded and don't want to confront it. And also without getting angry that this whatever it is there, or get caught up in blaming ourselves or others because this thing is happening. So with equanimity, it's not that we're just totally unresponsive. We can still respond, but we can respond in a wise way, not in a destructive way or in a way that's just really too involved with our own greed and anger and misunderstanding of what's going on. Another aspect of equanimity that's closely related to mental stability is balance. So when equanimity is there, there's this sense of being able to kind of stand right in the middle of whatever is going on and still remain centered, even in difficult situations. So it's sort of like there's this place of calm or place of stability, even if everything is chaos, say, in our minds. And we can also think of equanimity as the ability to see with understanding or to see with patience. And that's a really nice way, I think, of talking about equanimity, the ability to see with patience. So when the equanimity is present, we're not so caught up in the drama of what is occurring because we can see the big picture. We can understand, you know, for example, that whatever we're experiencing right now, it's not going to last forever. Inevitably, things are going to change. And as another example, we might be more patient and forgiving with other people because we recognize that just as we get caught up in our own emotions and reactivity, so do they. So maybe we don't take everything that they might say and do quite so personally. We can understand that maybe some of this comes out of their suffering, just as some of what we say and do that we later regret comes out of our suffering. So there's also that aspect of equanimity that's so related to the next parami I'm going to talk about, which is the parami of wisdom. And I think, you know, in the Buddhist understanding of wisdom, it really includes a big picture of wisdom. So the things that we might normally think about as wisdom are there. You know, being able to see clearly what's happening, to have understanding of the situation, having good judgment about our conduct and the way we deal with other people, all of those kinds of things are part of the parami of wisdom. But more specifically, in Buddhism, it's defined as realizing or perceiving the true nature of reality, seeing things as they are. And so this means insight into the three characteristics of dukkha or suffering, of anicca or impermanence, and of anatta or not self. And also of having an understanding about the Four Noble Truths. So another way of saying this might be to say that we can recognize our own suffering, we understand the causes behind it, and we also understand how to be free of it. So this is really the encompassing Buddhist wisdom. And when we understand those things, we also have the more everyday sort of wisdom because we have that kind of view that helps us to behave in ways that are wise and kind and non-harming. And it's also important to understand, too, that this kind of wisdom really goes beyond just an intellectual knowledge or believing what we have told. So it's not enough to hear about the three characteristics or to hear about the Four Noble Truths or to read about them in a book. We actually have to investigate them, experience them for ourselves, directly see and understand them for that wisdom to really take hold in our lives and in our hearts. So you can see that equanimity and wisdom are very much complementary and support each other. So the steadiness of mind and the clarity that goes along with equanimity is what lets us really see clearly and see deeply into these truths of dukkha, anicca, and anatta, which is what such an important basis for wisdom. And if we don't have enough steadiness of mind and stability, it's really hard to have that ability for the mind to really penetrate and see these things, and also to be with them when we do see them, because they're not always the most comforting of things. I mean, naturally, you know, seeing the reality of change, instability, suffering, even the instability of what we think of as ourselves, those are not easy things to be with. So we need stability of mind to actually experience them. And it's also true that wisdom supports equanimity. And we can develop a certain amount of steadiness and stability of mind just through concentration and the continuity of practice. But it's really the true understanding and insight into the true nature of things that they are that allows us to have equanimity, not only on the cushion, but in our daily lives, whatever might arise. You know, for example, if we have some understanding that things are impermanent and constantly changing, and if we know something for ourselves about the pain that we create in our own hearts and minds when we insist on craving for things that we don't have and don't have a good way to get, or clinging to things that are already changing and passing, we feel all of that and we have more of a sense that, you know, it really isn't worth it to get caught up in all that resistance and reactivity. And we still get caught up. Of course, we still get caught up. But we kind of understand more that it's not really leading anywhere. So it's easier for us to let go of those tendencies and meet things with more equanimity. And if we have some understanding of the truth of not self, maybe we can bring less tension to our relationships with others, because we're a little bit more able to separate these people's actions from who they are. We're not so insistent that on their badness or goodness or whatever it is we see. And the same thing is true of our relationships with ourselves. You know, as we begin to see more clearly that our thoughts and impulses arise from a whole myriad of causes and conditions, and that momentum of habit that we've been talking about earlier, we can be a little bit more at ease with them and deal with them more wisely. But then when we think that everything that comes up in our mind is so very personal and says something so important and so lasting about who we are, we can see them as more as habits and tendencies and things that come and go. And, you know, we can understand if this is skillful or not. We don't have to feel like it's a terrible burden of, I am this awful thing. There's no need for that. And also we have a little bit clearer of understanding of the limits of our control over other beings, as well as over what appears in our own minds. So, you know, we can accept a little bit more, you know, be more wise in the ways that we try to change things. And also when we have equanimity we have wisdom, we have the discernment to see when we're out of balance and when we're getting kind of caught up, and recognize that, maybe step back a little bit, maybe don't do anything, take a pause, so we don't act out of delusion or anger or greed, even though these things might be rolling around in our minds. You know, they might be up here, but if we can avoid acting them out in the world, that's all to the better. And so, as I mentioned earlier, intensive meditation practice is a really important way to develop wisdom and equanimity. But our daily life experiences are equally important. You know, if we see change as we go through our day-to-day experiences, you know, notice our moods changing, our circumstances changing, similar changes in the people around us, the changing of the seasons, that helps us to understand impermanence. when we experience dukkha or suffering as we go through our everyday life, you know, when things aren't quite the way we would like them to be. And so we're discontented and maybe we make things worse because we get so caught up and are upset about the things, what's already happening, you know. We understand more about dukkha. We understand more about the pain we feel when we get too identified and too caught up in our own identities and make everything all about us. So all of those things, and in fact, I think it's important to see these kinds of things in our meditation practice on retreat and on the cushion, but unless we also begin to see them in our daily lives, it's really hard to integrate what we see on the cushion with what's actually happening in a way that makes it practical. And also all of the other paramis that we've been cultivating today, including those that we might think of as more the everyday life paramis in comparison to equanimity and wisdom, they are all supporting the development of equanimity and wisdom. You know, we can begin with sila or ethical conduct. When we act in ways that don't bring harm to ourselves or to others, we have a more calm mind, a more untroubled mind. And we can bring that to our meditation. So we're not always bothered by worry about the consequences of our actions. We aren't always troubled by regret about things we've done. Generosity supports the development of equanimity and wisdom by teaching us the wisdom of non-clinging. And truthfulness also is really important because insight and understanding really depend on our willingness to see clearly whatever is arising in our lives and in our meditation practice, even if it's unpleasant, even if it's difficult. You know, that truthfulness helps us not to fall into delusion and to really see clearly. And in fact, the Buddha instructed his son that that's really maybe the most important thing is truthfulness. Because if we don't see clearly, if we're not willing to see clearly, there's only a limit of what we can understand. Resolve, energy, and renunciation are important too. They help us to put in the time we need to develop the concentration and mindfulness to see clearly and to get to a place of equanimity and wisdom. And they help us keep going even when obstacles arise, so we don't give in to the distractions that come up too quickly. And of course, patience and loving kindness are so important when conditions become difficult. If we have them, we can be kind to ourselves. We can take a larger view that's so important for equanimity and wisdom. And in fact, as we've seen, equanimity is sometimes defined as seeing with patience. So all of the qualities we've been cultivating today are our supports on the path and help us to develop equanimity, which, as Gil Fronsdale said, is the ground of wisdom and freedom. And then to actually go on and experience the insight, the wisdom and freedom that are the goals of this practice. So the paramis are just a wonderful foundation for everything we're aspiring to with our meditation.